This is NPR News.
Coming up, we've got local news for you. This is the Monday Morning Show. I'm Heidi Holton with Jennifer Barr. Hope you're having a good morning and, you know, learning there about heading into winter and less light. And if it affects you, which it affects most people in some ways or another, there's ways to help.
Yeah, there are. And already it's like, as soon as like the equinox hit, especially, it feels like our daylight is getting shorter and shorter. Our sunset now is before 7 p.m. Like it's like 6:58 or last night it was.
So
it's
yeah.
Like, wow, it's creeping in.
That's right. Even though it's been warm, it isn't quite hot dish weather. I did make a tater tot hot dish last night. So
yeah. Sometimes you just need that.
I know. You need a little more sustenance, I guess.
And that comfort food.
Coming up, we'll have the Up North Report. Lots of local news at our website. You can check out Larissa Donovan's story about lawmakers touring Bemidji State University. But Megan Buffington will bring us the Up North Report today. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. You can join us at KAXE.org.
Support comes from Minnesota Power, an elite company envisioning a carbon-free future through their Energy Forward strategy. More at mmpower.com/energyforward. Weather for today, sunny, highs 80 to 84, light southwest winds, partly cloudy overnight, lows in the upper 50s, and partly to mostly sunny tomorrow, highs 73 to 80.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with a special edition of the Up North Report.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Katie Pratt. I work with the Minnesota Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution, and I'll be serving as the moderator this evening.
Around 400 rangers packed into the Iron Trail Motors Event Center in Virginia earlier this month for a chance to address the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The agency is in the process of issuing new wastewater permits for U.S. Steel's Keetac mine, but the inclusion of a decades-old, rarely enforced standard is dredging up a lot of emotions. Minnesota's wild rice sulfate standard is as central to miners' fears as it is to environmental advocates' hope. Those who rely on mining for their livelihoods worry that the PCA's efforts to finally enforce the limit will devastate the Iron Range. Environmental and Indigenous advocates say enforcement is long overdue to protect sacred Monoman and keep Minnesota's water clean. Sulfate itself doesn't actually impact wild rice. It's the potential for it to turn into sulfide that is the problem. When that chemical reaction occurs in lake sediment, the sulfide can be harmful to wild rice, especially as it is growing. Sulfate is generated throughout taconite mining and processing, and as mines reuse water, sulfate gets more concentrated. Mines eventually discharge this water, prompting concerns about sulfate pollution. Minnesota's wild rice sulfate standard was adopted by the PCA in 1973. The protective measure recognized the plant's environmental, economic, and cultural importance. Wild rice, Monoman in Ojibwe, is an important food source for waterfowl, and the plant is central to Ojibwe identity and way of life, past, present, and future. Leanna Goose is a leader of the Rise and Repair Alliance and a Leech Lake band member.
By upholding Minnesota's sulfate standard, we hold companies accountable for their pollution and protect a food that has nourished people here for generations.
The idea of limiting sulfate to protect wild rice is based on studies done by researcher John B. Moyle in the 1930s and 40s. He wrote in a 1975 letter that the limit was adopted after a phone call with someone from the PCA asking about water quality and wild rice. The 50-year-old letter includes Moyle's recommendations for a wastewater permit for Minnesota Power's Clay Boswell Energy Center in Cohasset, which the company called unreasonable. The sentiment was echoed decades later at the PCA's public meeting on the Keetac permits. Derek Peterson is the business manager for Laborers Local 1091.
I strongly urge you to update the wild rice sulfate standard with all the research, science, and site-specific variables. The current 10 is unrealistic level, and wild rice has been proven to be successful at up to 1,600 milligrams.
The site-specific standard was proposed by the PCA in 2017. The agency came up with the rule after the legislature told them to overhaul the existing standard. Each body of water would have had its own limit based on its unique chemistry. But in 2018, an administrative law judge rejected the rule change, writing the PCA failed to prove that the new standard would be, quote, equally or more protective of wild rice waters. There are multiple factors that influence the success of a wild rice bed in a given year and over time. Studies, including Moyle's, seem to agree that the exact necessary sulfate limit can vary, though to what degree is more widely debated. Hay Lake is small and remote. It's the first wild rice water downstream of Keetac. U.S. Steel has been discharging into the water for decades and says there's still healthy wild rice growing there. But environmental groups recently visited and say the rice looks sick. Mike Maleska is a former United Steelworker Unit president and now part of the nonprofit Water Legacy.
What was the rice like here when you were young?
It went from just to the right of the inlet over there, about where that tree line drops off. It came all the way, that dense, all the way around the lake.
This really hurts. This really hurts here.
There's a lot more to the sulfate story. Read more about the complex saga and recent updates at kaxe.org. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
You can hear the latest version of the Up North Report today at 5:30 during All Things Considered here on KAXC. There's also lots of local news stories and conversations at kaxe.org.
We invite you to join us. That's Jennifer Barr. I'm Heidi Holton. Our question of the week, what do you remember about grocery stores growing up? Do you have some stories to share with us? You can text 218-326-1234.
Do you remember when they used to carry your groceries out to car for you? Did you have the drive-up system like my grocery store had with the buckets and the numbers and you had to drive up and get them?
Yep, and then the different, I remember being in the car very excited that I'm holding
number. I love to hand the guy the numbers when I was a little kid.
And the different kinds of carts, the ones that just kind of collapse in the front that mm-hmm. you just push, you don't have to like empty your stuff onto the thing. Like, you know, it was a different kind of a...
Oh.
Have you ever had...
I kind of know what you're talking about.
Trader Joe's is like that as well right now.
They just went, you could push it straight onto the conveyor belt?
Or? Yeah. The front came down of the grocery cart, and so they just pulled right out of your cart.
Okay.
It was a very convenient way. I come from, my great grandpa owned a grocery store in Ellendale, Minnesota, southern Minnesota. So grocery stores were a big deal to my grandfather, but they during the Depression had to move to Minneapolis and had to leave the grocery store behind. But then my grandpa went on to be an accountant for his career, and it was for grocery stores in the Twin Cities area. So meant a lot to us too. He was pretty proud of that background, and that reminded me. There's a John Hassler, the celebrated Minnesota author, who writes very. I love the kind of quietness. It's Minnesotan novels,
mm-hmm.
but I looked for the book this week, and I do not have a copy of this one. But
it's called Grand Opening.
Grand Opening, yep. And it's a family that moves to southern Minnesota and buys a grocery store. And really interesting story. But we hope that you've got stories to share with us as well. 218-326-1234. Maybe it's the Red Owl where your first boyfriend worked. Maybe that was just me. And my mom would embarrass me and go there all the time and make sure she waited in line to have Michael be the one to bag her groceries. And I was just embarrassed. He thought it was great, but that's okay. Share stories with us today. 218-326-1234. That's what you get when you tune in to KAXE. We are truly people powered. We bring you news, whether it is national, like what's coming up, or local, or stories. We'll talk butterflies and a local event coming up in the Grand Rapids area to help grieving families.
Support for KAXE comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, offering technology for businesses, including cloud solutions, cybersecurity services, network management, and more, all with local customer service and support. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
Going to be 80 to 84 with sunny skies today, light southwest winds, partly cloudy overnight with lows in the upper 50s, and partly to mostly sunny tomorrow, high 73 to 80.
Coming up, we'll have more news from National Public Radio's Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm A. Martinez. The Trump administration is continuing to test how much power Congress is willing to hand over to the president. And last week, the Supreme Court gave the administration further permission to do so. Congress had approved $4 billion in foreign aid, but the court's conservative majority ruled that, for now, the Trump administration does not have to spend the money. It's a move called a pocket rescission. That's different from a normal rescission request, which must be approved by Congress. So now those previously appropriated funds will simply expire. So what's all of this mean for lawmakers trying to agree on a spending deal to avoid a government shutdown? That's could be just a few days away. For this, we've called Brennan Buck. He's a GOP strategist who worked for two Republican House speakers. So, Brennan, what's this ruling from the Supreme Court mean for Congress's spending authority, at least for now, at least?
Well, I think it means it's up to them to stand up to themselves. The Supreme Court basically said the people who were suing over this just simply didn't have standing. They didn't rule on the merits. And ultimately, I think at this point, Congress needs to say, not only is it our constitutional responsibility to decide how spending is allocated, but these are laws. Congress has passed a law saying that this $4 billion needs to go to these purposes. And the president simply shouldn't have the authority to ignore that law. And that's what he's trying to do right now.
So with this spending deal that could lead to a government shutdown, say if Democrats sign off on particulars on a deal, what's to stop the president from another pocket rescission, especially since he seems to have the Supreme Court's backing?
Yeah, I think that's the stakes here. It's the precedent that they're setting here. This is a relatively small amount of money, but if the president is able to do this and establish that he put in one of these rescissions requests right at the end of the year, which is what they're doing right now, and trying to sort of game the calendar to say that Congress doesn't need to act, I don't think there's any question that he'll come back next year at the end of next fiscal year with a much larger package and basically point back to this precedent that they set. So I think it is in the interest of not just Democrats, but Republicans as well, to protect their institution, include language in this funding package that simply says you can submit a rescissions request, but it needs to be done in a timely manner so that Congress has time to act on it. Because what he's trying to do right now is let the clock run out and just put up his hands and say, you guys didn't vote. I have no option but not to spend it.
How binding would that language be?
If it's put in law, I think it would be very clarifying. They're trying to use a loophole in what's called the Impoundment Control Act from 1974, which allows presidents to make requests to cancel funds, but they've always required Congress to vote affirmatively to back up that request. What they're doing now is using the end of the fiscal year. Congress has the deadline. Money can't be spent outside of the fiscal year that it's offered in. And so what they've done is put this request in right at the end of the fiscal year. If they clarify that the law says you can only put in these requests long enough ahead of a fiscal year that we have time to act, I think that would make the courts look at this very differently.
Even courts that are appointed by Donald Trump, I mean, he's got a bit of a majority in his favor.
They haven't even ruled on the merits on this, actually. And I have a sense that if the merits were considered, that he might lose. The challenge is that only one person has standing to sue in these court cases, and that's the GAO, head of the Government Accountability Office, and they haven't done that.
Now, you wrote an opinion piece in the New York Times spelling out how pocket rescissions could backfire on Republicans in the future. How so?
Absolutely. I mean, you should have some principle and interest in protecting your own institution, but if you're just looking at it selfishly, if you're a Republican and a future Democratic president comes in and says, well, we're just not going to spend money on my examples are immigration enforcement or some military spending, I think you're probably going to look at this very differently. So it's not just this $4 or $5 billion in the short term. You've got to think about the long-term precedent that you're setting of how presidents can take away your power. Congress writes a law, says we're going to spend something, and just because there's this little quirk in this 1974 law that says they can request to get rid of it at the end of the year, and you just look the other way, I think that is really eroding their power. And they should think about not just what's right in front of them.
President's having some meetings with some members of Congress to kind of hash out this deal. About 20 seconds to go, Brendan. Is a shutdown inevitable at this point?
It sure feels like it. Republicans don't seem like they have any real reason to negotiate at this point because they seem to have the upper hand. And Democrats, I think, kind of feel like they need to show that they're willing to fight. So both sides will probably have a shutdown. I'm hoping it doesn't last very long, but that looks like where we're headed.
That's Republican strategist Brendan Buck. Brendan, thanks.
There's been a big shakeup in the race for New York City mayor. The current mayor, Eric Adams, dropped out Sunday, which could make things harder for Democratic frontrunner Zohran Mamdani. NPR's Brian Mann has this report.
In a video posted on social media, Adams said his reelection fight was crippled by media innuendo and unfair investigations, including by the city's campaign finance board, which last month voted to deny Adams matching funds. Adams said that made it impossible to keep going.
Despite all we've achieved, I cannot continue my reelection campaign.
Adams' administration was rocked by scandals, including federal bribery charges. That case was shelved under President Trump's Justice Department and dismissed by a federal judge. But support for Adams' reelection cratered. With Adams out, this race is one step closer to a head-to-head matchup between Zohran Mamdani, a state assemblyman and a relative newcomer to New York politics, and former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Cuomo resigned in 2021 following allegations of sexual misconduct, which he's denied. In his comeback bid, he's running as an independent, fighting to win over a big chunk of Adams voters by portraying Mamdani as inexperienced and a radical. We face destructive extremist forces that would devastate our city, Cuomo said in a statement Sunday, adding, quote, it's not too late to stop them. Mamdani is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, and if he wins, he'd be the city's first Muslim mayor. He fired back at Cuomo Sunday, saying New Yorkers shouldn't trade, quote, one disgraced corrupt politician for another. It's unclear whether the shakeup will slow Mamdani's steady lead in the race, fueled by young campaign volunteers and social media ads like this one, focused on affordability.
The cost of living is the real crisis. New Yorkers are being crushed by rent and childcare.
This is still a three-way contest. Republican Curtis Sliwa also faces pressure to drop out, including from President Trump, in order to set up a one-on-one race between Mamdani and Cuomo. Sliwa has said he's staying in through the November election. Brian Mann, NPR News, New York.
This is NPR News.
This is KAXE and the Monday Morning Show. It is 7:17. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton.
Coming up, we'll bring you events up north. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We've got our question of the week out there. We open them up on Mondays, and it's, what do you remember about grocery stores as a kid? You can text us 218-326-1234. We heard from someone saying, I loved riding on the little shelf under the grocery cart while my mom pushed the cart through Lukens, the old downtown Bemidji location, the current location of the Watermark Arts Center.
Aww. Very fun. I don't remember ever getting to ride under the under cart, but sitting in the cart, I can remember. And there was a different grocery store than the one I worked in. There was two grocery stores in Spicer when I was very young. One was downtown, and it was called Juba's.
Oh, sure.
And it had a ramp. Like, it had two levels, so you had to
could
push the cart up the ramp. And I always thought that was the coolest thing.
And what was the other one?
Yankees.
So Juba's?
Although I think when Juba's Yankees existed, it was like Bill's Red Owl or something. It was not yet Yankee Foods. But also then in New London, the town nearby where I actually went to school, they had the big store.
It was called the big store.
And it actually dated back to like the early days of the town. That was just what people called it. It was called the big store. And that too actually had a ramp, but we didn't shop there very often just because it was not our town. But even though it was 4 miles away, the big store no longer exists, sadly.
Yeah, that's the deal. The grocery store situation has changed. Especially if you live in very small towns, sometimes you have to travel quite a way. That's where we got the idea for this story from MinPost. That story is available at kaxe.org from their new Greater Minnesota reporter, Brian Arola. talking, meeting some folks who own a grocery store in Grigla and in Cook and
Greenbush,
yeah. And just talking about the economics and what it means to communities. But we are looking for your stories when it comes to grocery stores. I remember going with my grandma Ina a lot to the groceries. We went to a Super Value in Crystal, I believe, by her house in Robbinsdale. And Ina was a very, she liked to push people, you know, she liked to make me be brave. And she was always stealing produce and eating it while were in the store. And I just thought, oh my gosh, we're going to get in trouble, Ina. She's like, you got to try the grapes before you buy them. Now, is that okay? Do you ever do that?
No, I don't. I don't. I guess if it's just like a grape, but to me, it still feels like wrong. But this also comes from the girl who took a piece of candy corn from the grocery store and felt guilty for it.
Me too. I took,
guilty about it for years and years.
Yeah, I took a caramel Brock's. I tried to, and then by the time we were towards the end of the store, I ran back to the produce area where they had the big Brock's display and put it back because I just couldn't quite live with myself about that. So that makes sense. We have some similar ideas about things. But I will try the grapes. Yeah, I will, okay. And especially if I'm buying them and I'm sort of feeling peckish as I'm grocery shopping, I am channeling my grandmother and trying those out. So we'd love to hear from you. You can text us 218-326-1234. Coming up at 9 o'clock today, we bring you Headwaters. Chris Walker is our host today.
That's right, and request line coming up at 10:30 where we pick a theme and you give us some song suggestions. Today, Chris is looking for songs about sleep. So text in 218-326-1234.
Going to be a warm day. We're expecting 80 to 84 around the region, light southwest winds, lows in the upper 50s for tonight and tomorrow, Tuesday, partly to mostly sunny, high 73 to 80, overnight lows near 60, and Wednesday, sunny, highs in the upper 70s to low 80s. The moon has been so cool to watch in the early evening the last few nights. Tom's out there looking through his telescope at it. And I did one of the nights too. We were looking at the craters on the moon that look like owl eyes, sort of. It was just a really sort of cool thing to see. So in the stars, oh my gosh, so much to see.
Have we figured out what planet is in the
Venus
low horizon in the early mornings now?
Yep, okay. It is Venus. Cool. So keep a watch out there.
Support comes from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement. Dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
We'd also like to thank the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community, working with their friends and neighbors with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information, coleranebank.com, member FDIC.
It is time for Events Up North, a closer look at some of the events happening across northern Minnesota this week.
Minnesota Department of Transportation has an open house from 4 to 6 tomorrow, September 30th, at Park Rapids City Hall. You can learn about the Highway 71 corridor study. There will not be a formal presentation, so you may come and go as you wish.
And butterfly enthusiast Allison Barta will give a presentation at the Watermark Art Center in Bemidji on Wednesday, 6 o'clock. This was her 15th season of documenting butterflies in the area, and we're going to talk to Allison coming up at 8:10 this morning.
Jennifer, you were saying you can't believe how many species of butterflies there are, right?
Yeah.
That we get in Minnesota, too. As we are looking ahead, well, it is already open deer hunting season when it comes to archery, but we'll have, of course, firearms opening. And you can learn about chronic wasting disease with the Minnesota chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. That is this Thursday from 5 to 8 at Cuyuna Brewing Company in Crosby. Find out how to prepare your deer for testing and share hunting stories and wild game recipes with other hunters.
And Watermark Art Center in Bemidji welcomes textile artist Kristen Anderson this Friday from 5 to 7. Anderson's exhibit, Refugia, the Seasonal Pond Project, with tapestries accompanied by words from two local poets, and Anderson will give a brief presentation at 5:30.
Friends of the Brainerd Public Library have their Big Fall Book Sale October 1st through the 3rd at Westgate Mall from 10 to 6 each day.
And the McCrosty Art Center's fall studio tour is this Saturday from 10 to 4 with 9 different studios, 21 participating artists. You can find maps at the McCrosty Art Center in Grand Rapids or online at mccrostyartcenter.org/studio tour.
Ninth Annual Monarch Butterfly Festival is this Saturday, October 4th. It's from 1 to 4. It's at the New Bemidji Veterans Home on Ann Street. There'll be speakers, music, and a children's butterfly parade. Kids should arrive before 3 o'clock to create butterfly wings for the parade. We were out yesterday a little bit in the woods, was seeing some butterflies out there and out by the wildflowers and some beautiful pollinators too. We have some late growing wildflowers and lots of bees in there.
Yeah, I've been seeing lots of bees too. I have a plant called sedum that turns this light green all summer, and then in the fall it turns kind of pink.
Oh, yeah, I like that plant.
Yeah. And there's bees really like it.
Okay. We used to have that one. I don't know what happened to it.
And the Iron Range Pasty Festival is this Saturday at the Mountain Iron Community Center from 4 to 7. You can enjoy pasties made from all local ingredients, plus live music and local farmers market vendors.
Now, there's always a big line for the pasties. They usually sell out. It's a big deal. You know, what your crust is like for your pasty is a really big deal. And the people there have figured it out.
And
flaky.
Rutabaggy. Mm-hmm. Not rutabaggy.
Right. All those things you need to figure out with pasties. You can, freeze them up and all that stuff. I remember during the pandemic ordering them and then driving through. You know, we couldn't. Mm-hmm. It's still seems so strange, but we ordered them ahead of time and then we drove them out in Iron and drove through a line at a church, and we had to be very careful. I think we opened up our back, didn't want to touch anyone, to get our bag of pasties. Range Area Walked and Alzheimer's is this Sunday. It's at Minnesota Discovery Center in Chisholm. Registration begins at noon with the opening ceremony at 1 and the walk to follow.
Events Up North is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. If you have events to share with our listeners, email psa@kaxc.org. And you can find Events Up North at kaxc.org every week.
We have an album of the week this week?
Yes, we do.
All right, lay it on me.
It is called Neon Gray Midnight Green, and it's by Nico Case.
Oh,
this is her 8th solo album, her first one since 2018's Hell On. It is expansive and densely orchestrated. It is her first fully self-produced album, recorded with a large group of friends, common collaborators, and a full orchestra. It offers delightful left turns with songs suddenly shifting tempos and moods and morphing into something completely different. We'd love to hear what you think of it. We'll be hearing lots more throughout the week. You can text in your thoughts, 218-326-1234. The song we're going to hear today from Nico Case is called Little Gears.
I assumed it was a 3-day event, as intricate as they are, as fragile as they are. But she finished it in less than an hour. I felt cheated by how easy it was. No mistakes, no missteps.
I'll try not to explain everything away. Little spider,
that is Nico Case from our album of the week. That song was called Little Gears. The album is Neon Gray Midnight Green. We'll be hearing more from that throughout the week. And
the unmistakable indie sort of sounds of Nico Case. I like her voice and kind of ethereal. So that might be the way to describe her. I don't know.
Yeah.
We heard from Shara, who says, this is my new favorite song.
Nice.
Yeah. Glad to hear it. You'll be able to find more information on it at our website, kaxe.org.
Support for KAXE comes from the Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids, featuring Martini Monday each week from 5 to 8. Find more information at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
We want to thank you again for helping as we are looking forward after losing federal funding like all of public media. We had an emergency fundraiser over the summer, and we are moving into trying to find new funding sources. You helped us raise over $162,000. If you didn't get a chance to do it, you can help us out. We are local. That money stays local, and it helps support local voices and stories, great music. Visit KAXE.org and click on the word donate or text 218-326-1234. Thank you so much. You've made such a huge difference for us.
Another way to help us out is to share our work. Mm-hmm. If you come across the story we did on social media, go ahead and share that with others. Let them know where you find your local news and information. Just let them know about KAXE. I think there's a lot of folks in our community who do not know we exist. So your help in that too will help us build us a stronger radio station.
There's a flu vaccine clinic this Thursday, October 2nd, with Itasca County Public Health. It's from 4 to 6 at the Itasca Resource Center in Grand Rapids for those with and without insurance. No appointments are necessary.
It is time now for best wishes. We're going to do our best to wish friends and neighbors happy birthday, happy anniversary. We'll start with yesterday, September 28th.
John and Cataline Regal celebrate their 53rd anniversary from Minneapolis. And Jean Fastland, happy 70th to you from Hill City.
Today is September 29th. Happy 25th anniversary, Ooh. Silver anniversary to our friends Jen Kellen and Dave Jensen. They are from Shevlin. Tom Carges, happy 65th birthday to you in Grand Rapids. And our own Andrew DeZingle celebrating a birthday today, too. And Evelyn Quartz is turning 21 today in Duluth. Our best wishes to you all. We're going to hear some new music now. This is Caroline Spence, and it's called Effortless.
I feel
That is Caroline Spence with Effortless here on the Monday Morning Show. I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton. Thanks for listening to KAXE.
Coming up, we're going to have our Daily Dose of Nature with John Latimer. Make sure you stay tuned. We're going to have a little book talk. We'd love to hear from you. What are you reading right now? And then we're taking stories today and throughout the week about grocery stores. We heard from Brenda. She said, good morning, you two. In my small town of Walker, Minnesota, we actually had 4 grocery stores when I grew up. Red Owl in the corner, Hanson's IGA, where my great uncle was a butcher, was mid-block. Across the street was Sandy Super Value, and on the next block on the corner was the Hart store. My mom shopped with coupons, green stamps, and gold bond stamps at each. Phew. And I know one of Brenda's sisters is a baker, or was a baker at a grocery store. Can you imagine how early you got to get up to be the baker?
Yeah. I had an aunt, I still have an aunt, but she no longer works in the grocery store, but she did that for a while too, where she was in the bakery department.
We'd love to hear from you. What do you remember about your small town grocery store or your favorite grocery stores? You know, even if you didn't grow up in a small town, what did it mean to you? What are your memories of it? I know how was Zane when he was little in grocery stores? How was that?
Pretty good.
Okay.
I would often go shopping without him because he was at his daycare, and it was like, I will go shopping before I pick him up.
Yes.
Not that he was difficult. It made things a little easier instead of, you know, having to put the kid into the cart, take him out of the car seat, all that, especially when he was little. So he never really begged for treats or anything. You know, he was usually a pretty good kid. I remember once when he was little, he was very into Dora the Explorer and Diego. And those guys were on all kinds of products. And I just remember him going, Diego, Dora, going down the aisle. You kept seeing them everywhere. Like, wow, these guys are everywhere.
I, at one of our local grocery stores, a group of my friends and I like to see what we can find on the half-off shelf and kind of share that with each other to see what's there, because you just never know. It's very exciting to find out what is there. You know, there's lots of cool things. Are lots of stories that happen in grocery stores. I know when I was a kid, we would go into town, go into Brainerd. Our big deal was to go in on a Saturday, get our groceries. First, go get our books at the public library, then go to the grocery store and fill up for a week. And then, of course, it would not last because there were just 2 of us left at home, 2 of the 4 kids. And my mom would just, you know, of course, the food was gone with like in a day and a half, or the good stuff, at least. Keith would eat the whole box of cereal, or, you know, who knows what. But yeah, lots of memories when it comes to grocery stores, of family, of small towns. You can text us at 218-326-1234.
Programming is supported by Empty Bowls, fighting local hunger and building a stronger community with the Grand Rapids and Deer River Community Cafe. The event takes place Thursday, October 23rd at Timberlake Lodge from 11 to 2 and 4 to 7. Tickets include soup and a locally made ceramic bowl. More info on Facebook at Itasca Empty Bowls Project.
Support comes from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, dedicated to conserving the rich ecological landscape of Minnesota. They offer memberships, educational camps, and habitat projects. More information available at mndeerhunters.com.
Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Here is John Latimer looking back at his nature notes for this date.
On today's date, September 29th, 2002, I had occasion to be mucking about in a bog and stumbled upon the bog birch. We are all familiar with paper birch, which is a very common tree of the uplands. We learned to recognize it at a very young age. The bog birch is equally common. It's in every bog that I've ever been in. Well, every bog that has the right chemical mix to the soil. The leaf itself on the bog birch is quite nicely roundly scalloped. I wouldn't call them teeth so much as scallops. And the leaves are small. The bog birch never grows much over 6 or 8 feet tall. And the leaves in the fall turn a remarkable red color. And they are just gorgeous this time of year. So if you are out Maybe you're a duck hunter and you get out into some of these areas, or maybe you just are out exploring, or maybe your deer stand requires you to cross a swamp. Whatever the case, if you're out this time of year and you're checking things out, look for those bright red scalloped leaves of the bog birch.
That is our daily phenology. You can tune in tomorrow morning, 7:20, for John Latimer's latest observations. We'll also have our student phenology talk back starting at 6:45. It's so great to hear from our kids back in school, and so much is happening this time of year. I saw keep seeing mushrooms in my yard.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Which it seems like we haven't had that wet of weather to create so much fungi, but they're there, and they're all kinds of different ones.
Yeah, I saw one yesterday when I was walking in the woods. It was like, it looked like it was a golf ball on a tee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like, oh, what's that? And then some huge ones, and yeah, so many mushrooms. So much going on out there. Tomorrow, John Latimer is away, and Charlie Mitchell's going to be filling in.
That's right.
So we've got student phenology reports, and Charlie's going to bring us the phenology report as well. So it's going to be a great morning. Hope you'll tune in tomorrow.
We've been talking about grocery stores as our question of the week. Kind of your memories of what things were like when you were younger, or what do you like to find in a grocery store? Do you like when, like, you talked about, like, the Brock's loose candy mm-hmm. that you could put in a bag and mm-hmm. and things like that? We could get into Supermarket Sweep, the TV show.
Did you watch that? No, never saw it.
Oh, my goodness. What a fun.
Was it? You get a certain amount of time. You can take whatever you want.
Yeah. So they would play, like, these little, like, trivia games or, like little word scrambles with, like, food products and stuff. So they would, you know, earn their time. The more questions they got right, you would earn more, like maybe 10 seconds. And then at the end of the show, the three teams would get to run around the store. And the point was to buy as much dollar worth, you know, as you could. So people would be putting the big hams, you know, in the cart and trying to load up on that. And like, you could get five of one product. And then there was like specials where if you get this certain kind of coffee, you can grind the coffee, which of course took more time, but then you got this bonus. So there's all kinds of strategy. And the little tagline was, remember when you're at the store and you hear the beep, think of all the fun you could have on Supermarket Sweep. Something like that.
We're looking for grocery store stories today. You can text us 218-326-1234. Let's talk a little bit of reading. I know you took home a book over the weekend.
I did.
I just buzzed through it.
I did because I need to return it to its rightful owner, and I always feel like if I'm borrowing a book, I need to make sure it gets back in time.
You're so good. Even though that can make me do opposite. Like I take so long with it because I feel like the pressure out there.
Yeah. I actually read the book that was on last week's What We're Reading. I can't remember the title. Something about Jane Austen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a time travel.
Oh, now are you normally a time travel person?
I do like time travel. It's called The Austen Affair by Madeline Bell. You can listen to our conversation or Tammy Babarski's conversation with that author at our website, kaxe.org.
See, I'm not a time travel person at all. If I find out a book's about that, I'm like, nope, not reading that one. Huh.
Yeah, no, I do. I do love a time travel story. Because it's so interesting to me, like what's going to happen if you change something or or there's like, of course, I can never remember titles, but a book where she kept going back to the same day, kind of like Groundhog Day, but mm-hmm. like she kept going back to her 16th birthday and then every little thing, you know, how she was, then she'd wake up again and things would be slightly different, or in her future, things would be different because of what happened in the past. So this book, it's two actors who are in a modern day version, film adaptation of Northanger Abbey. And then they get into an electrical accident.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
and
you do.
Get zip back to the time of Jane Austen because they are filming in England where she lives. So they end up, you know, right there. And the actor, actually, his family like has long, long history in this area. So he's actually with his relatives. They think he's the long lost brother. They thought he died in this Napoleonic War, but he shows up. He looks just like his great, great, great uncle, of course.
Oh.
And, but he's with his co-star and they're figuring stuff out and how to get back and, dealing with being in the 1800s.
Sure.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Not, I'd love to hear from folks too. It just doesn't thrill me, the idea of like you could change one thing and how would it be different? And because I see that in movies, I see that in books.
Are you a fan of Back to the Future or no?
Well, I mean, I loved it when I came out and I went
Michael
to
J.
it.
Fox,
yeah, sure. It was a great movie, but yeah. But no, I don't know. There's something about it that isn't quite my deal. I was off and read a lot, but I'm like right now, the book I'm reading, I don't know if you've ever read Jesse Q. Sutanto's books?
I don't know.
Okay, so this is the second in the Vera Wang series. It's okay. Vera Wang's Guide to Snooping on a Dead Man. And it is a little Chinese woman in San Francisco who has decided that she is a detective and she is a snoop and she's in everybody's business. I love the first one. It has a lot to do with food. Like she'll show up. One of the scenes I read over the weekend, she's just a busybody. You know, she's waiting in line at a coffee shop. She sees a girl looking sort of forlorn and she starts talking to her and it turns out, you know, her boyfriend's gone and she just says, I am a detective. I will solve this for you. And she is not, but her son Tilly his girlfriend is a detective and she has to go water plants and she takes a bobby pin and gets into the locked briefcase and finds she is just a snoop.
Yeah.
She's great. But so to find out information, she makes up all of this food and brings it to people. And then they have these, they just become open to anything because the food is so good and mm-hmm. it just kind of comforts them or something. So, and then she, you know, it's like she ends up finding a community of people. She ends up liking younger people too, even though she just kind of yells at them about their ways and stuff. But definitely like a comedy, which is sort of fun and sort of a different thing to read. And she's written some other books too that I enjoyed. Jesse Q. Sutanto, Vera Wang is the series that I really enjoyed, the second one in that one. And then I did watch the Thursday Night Murders Club a couple weeks ago. I'd read the books.
Oh, yeah.
I watched it on Netflix. Have you seen it?
Was that a series or a movie that they made?
A movie.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, similar thing happened where if you read a book, it's just not quite the same. Like the acting mm-hmm. was great. I mean, mm-hmm. Helen Mirren, Ben Kingsley, Pierce Brosnan. Who's the other guy? I'm trying to remember. There's some stuff that was great in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, they made some changes that just break the hearts of people who have read the book. You know, it's just not quite there. But then Tom also watched it and he didn't have any of those feelings because he hadn't read it. He
thought
it was really sort of fun. So there's four books in that series. So we'll see if they make another movie of that. But it's the sets on that one are so beautiful. Like I was watching it with my friends and we had not quite pictured the level of elegance of where they lived in these retirement community.
Yeah.
And so just to see the bookshelves and the, you know, just everything in this place was so fun to see that come to life.
I did read the first book in that series and like trying to picture this retirement community was kind of hard because it felt like there was various buildings and things. So.
Yeah. That part was just beautiful to watch that and see that. I also read kind of an older, not really older exactly. I don't know when it came out. But food writer and food critic Ruth Reichel, I don't know how you pronounce her name. She had a novel called Delicious, and I read that while I was on vacation. And it was this really interesting story of like someone who worked at like a gourmet magazine. You know, she was kind of new to it and was in a big mansion in New York City and things are going well. And then it's because it takes place in probably the early 2000s or something when magazines start to, you know, dwindle. And mm-hmm. so they're going to be closed, but she's the only one left there. They have to keep it open because they have a line with the magazine. The magazine's called Delicious, and people can call in and complain about things. So they want to keep that going. So she's the only one in the office.
Yeah.
And she ends up finding this, there's a library that nobody used. It was up on the third floor. Another thing that was about buildings, but the library had been locked away, and she figures out how to get into the library, and it's beautiful old card catalogs, and she finds like a room, a secret room. She pushes something and there's a whole secret room, and it's all these letters that James Beard had written during the war to this little girl. And or different things. It's like very oddly organized too. So if you are a librarian, you will love this because it's a mystery from the card catalog to that room. Like, it's not under the normal sort of categorization. So she's ends up trying to solve this kind of mystery or story of James Beard and this young girl and their connection during the war and all of that stuff. So it was pretty entertaining. It was a little longer than I thought. I don't know. How long are the books you read usually?
Usually between 300 and 350 pages.
Yeah, this was more like 450 or yeah. something like that. And so it was, I enjoyed it, but I definitely at one point thought, really? Now it seems like you should be wrapping up at this point. Although I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say that, but
yeah.
you know, sometimes they go off on so many different tangents.
Right. Or you'll be partway through a book and you're like, yeah, shouldn't this be wrapping up soon?
Yeah.
But
we always love hearing what you're reading. You can text us at 218-326-1234.
Yeah, a book I recently read actually kind of ties into our question of the week about grocery stores, coincidentally. But mm-hmm. I read The View from Mount Joy by mm-hmm. Lorna Landvik, who Minnesota author. I believe we've talked to her before, but she mm-hmm. I love all of her books so mm-hmm. much. She just creates these characters and these worlds, and they mostly take place in Minnesota, so you feel like you're at home. And this one, the main character happened to, it spans about from his high school days to he's probably in his early 50s by the time it ends, you know. Mm-hmm. But so he starts off working at this grocery store as a high schooler. He and his mom, who, you know, they just lost his dad. They moved to Minneapolis to, you know, fresh start, all that. So he works at this grocery store, and the owner is like so kind to him, and he meets this other, you know, this bag boy who at first he thinks is kind of this young punk, but they end up being best friends. And anyway, he ends up inheriting the grocery store, which he does not want, but it turns into probably, you know, this really great thing. And he makes this store so fun where he will have these little contests and like where he'll see somebody who, you know, he can tell really needs something, and he'll just make up a contest on the spot. Like, I bet they can answer this question, and I will give them some groceries.
Aww.
Or he eventually, you know, would get businesses to donate things, but he kind of knew exactly who needed these things. And grocery store and community was mm-hmm. really a big part of this book.
Yeah.
Again, called The View from Mount Joy by Lorna Landvik.
There we go. What are you reading? You can text us 218-326-1234. If you're looking for something new to read, we recommend you go to our website. I'm doing it right now. And if you look under shows, you can find what we're reading. Our staff librarian, Tammy Browski, puts together that program. And you can get this list of books that she has featured and conversations with authors. So many different things there that you might want to check out. Go to kaxe.org.
Support comes from Grand Rapids State Bank, committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
And thanks also to Watermark Art Center in downtown Bemidji. They have exhibits, classes, and handcrafted original art made by regional artists found in their shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public. WatermarkArtCenter.org.
Our range of temperatures right now, 48 in Hibbing to 53 in Aiken, Bemidji, Grand Rapids, Brainerd, all at 53 degrees right now. And for today, it should be sunny, highs 80 to 84 with light southwest winds. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the upper 50s. And tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs 73 to 80. Southeast winds 5 to 15. And looking ahead to Wednesday, sunny, highs in the upper 70s to low 80s.
Coming up at 8:10, we bring you The Bright Spot. Today we are welcoming back Allison Barda. She's giving a presentation this Wednesday at the Watermark Art Center in Bemidji all about butterflies. She takes some amazing photographs of that. And then we're learning about the Angel of Hope Vigil in Grand Rapids. It's at the Memorial Park right across the river here from Grand Rapids. And they have an event coming up a week from today, beginning at 6 p.m. to help grieving parents.
And you are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. You can find us at KAXE.org or ask your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you so much for your support.
Coming up at 9, Headwaters with our very own Chris Walker. At 1 o'clock today, volunteer hosted on the river. David John is going to be our host. And tonight at 7 o'clock, it's DJ the DJ, putting together a great mix of music to keep you company in and on your day. I don't know.
Throughout your day.
Sure.
Yeah. And remember, this morning, 10:30, it is Request Line as part of Chris Walker's Headwaters show. He's